This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Paula Poundstone is a comedian who speaks her mind. A lot of our listeners know her from her appearances on the NPR News quiz, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. When she's on the show, she usually provides some of the best moments. For example, here she is with host Peter Sagal, questioning why any religion would forbid something as delicious as bacon.
That's an interesting question for a Jewish theologian. Why would God forbid such a wonderful product?
Something that delicious.
And useful.
I think that's a strange question. Why would God take away the bacon from the Jews?
Right. Yeah.
Given that the Jews have been through a lot.
Yeah.
If you were going to question any suffering,
you might start elsewhere.
Yes, yeah. Yes, I would think.
Clearly you're not Jewish.
Yes. That's it.
So maybe she's not Jewish, but she clearly loves bacon. Paula Poundstone started her career right in our backyard. She's from Sudbury, and she's coming back home to perform at the new Bull Run in Shirley tonight. And she joins us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Welcome to Radio Boston, Paula.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Well, I I had forgotten about that Wait, Wait show.
And it made me laugh so hard. And there was something you said before that that was even funnier, where I think you said something like, what kind of religion wouldn't let you eat bacon? And it just made me laugh so much.
Oh, I'm flattered. I'll tell you, the guys who put together the show are very, very brilliant guys. I would still argue that it's probably serendipitous, just the combinations that work as well as they do. It's very, very fun to do. It's like being a batter in a batting cage, you know, that you get kind of lobbed topics. Sometimes I just swing and miss. Sometimes I just watch them go by. And every now and then I get a little piece of something. And
well, that was brilliant. I want to play another clip. As long as we're talking about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Let me play another clip. And this was one I'm sure you'll recall. It's another one where I just I had to pull off the road. I was laughing so hard. It's when you took on Michael Pollan, the champion of the local food movement and the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma. So let's just listen for a minute. Then I want to talk to you about it. Here it is.
One of the things that has made my life worth living is ringdings. And I feel that it is food. Are you going to tell me that's not food?
There's a few simple tests to figure out if a ringding is food or not. How many ingredients does a ringding have?
A devil's food cake, one.
Yeah. Now, see, right there.
Yeah. A creamy filling, yeah. Two. And a rich chocolate outer coating. What's the matter with you?
I think I would look at the package next time. That creamy is not cream.
It's C-R-E-M-E-Y. Creamy. What the hell's the matter with you?
Paul, I got to tell you, I almost feel sorry for him. He didn't have a chance with you.
You know, I wish I could say that I was on the right side of the law here. You know what I mean?
Did you go into that program knowing that you were going to take Michael Pollan on like that? Or does that stuff just come to you? Because
Oh, no. No. And in fact, I've always wondered. He had come down and, you know, he left immediately after his section. And I've never known, you know, if he had to go to his daughter's raw foods festival or if he was upset. My guess would be that he just had other responsibilities that night. We haven't spoken since. And I wonder if he takes
and
as much
and he's never returned any of my
that.
Calls since. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when I asked him to be the, you know, keynote speaker at my son's graduation, we haven't heard back.
Hey, let me ask you to back up a little bit. I want to ask you a little bit about your Massachusetts roots. You cut your teeth, I understand, on the local comedy scene in Boston in the 1980s, was it? Was that a good place to start comedy?
It was a great place. Yeah, it was a great place. I started in 79 and, doing open mic nights in 79. And so they would have these shows that had like six comics and they would each do like, I don't know, was it 10 minutes a piece or something like that? They were pretty awful. because they had all just started, you know, and it does take a while to kind of get the hang of it. But the thing is, the crowds were so enthusiastic and so sort of excited. I mean, obviously, stand-up comedy has been around forever, but this resurgence in the interest of it is what these guys kind of took a flyer on and really were, to some degree, responsible. It was Paul Barclay and Bill Downs put together, you know, the Comedy Connection, it was called.
Yep.
And they really were, to some degree, responsible for reigniting that interest and therefore getting, you know, people like myself. I mean, I never would have been nervy enough, you know, to go into a club and say, hey, what do you say? You let me, you know, try telling some jokes here. I mean, I would never, ever have been able to do that.
And do you remember what it was like those very first times that you went up on a stage and tried stuff? I mean, it must be...
Well, it was exhilarating and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that I would be, you know, a little bit in a trance. Mm-hmm. And I believed, by the way, in all the years of watching, you know, Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show, I actually never realized anything was written down.
You didn't know there was a guy there with big cards behind the
with
camera.
With the big cards. I mean, yeah. I can't remember at what point I figured that out. But and then even when I did figure that out, it seemed so gross to me. You know, and I thought, well, you mean he's not just funny? So I was always sort of on the horns of this thing about, are you supposed to sort of have this very produced 5 minutes, or are you supposed to just talk? And I actually started out trying to just talk, and to disastrous result, just terrible.
Yeah.
Then, and then I realized, oh, and then I swung entirely the other way. Then I was like, oh my God, that's terrible. I must know everything I'm going to say. And so I'll write these jokes down and I will tell them. And then there are the people in the room who are, you know, they're the blueberries in the muffin, you know? They're the, you know.
So are you saying you feed off of them? You sort of get a sense of, I mean, they help guide you where you're going?
I do the time-honored, where you're from, what do you do for a living?
I see.
And I sort of, you know, I lay myself open to being distracted now. I hope when I go on that I will be distracted.
Is there a style of comedy, or is there something about where you come from that informs your comedic style? And I'm not talking about your accent. I can hear some Massachusetts still in your accent. But I mean, just, you know, your style of humor. Because I think there is. I don't know how to articulate it, but I think there is.
I'm not sure. I mean, I know that Boston comedy, per se, back in when I was there, which was, you know, 79, I started in the early 80s, I was there a lot. The culture of stand-up comedy in Boston was very harsh, very aggressive, very loud, very profane, very blue, and very sexist. You know, here I toddle in from Sudbury, Massachusetts, and frankly, I did not do very well. I was not really a part of that group in most ways. I was sort of, I ran the pathetic side.
But I think, Paula, you picked up some of that attitude that you just described. And I mean that as a compliment, because, I mean, I hear, you know, you have such a kind of edge to your stuff that I think is very much of this world and that world you just described. I don't know if you agree with that.
Well, I mean, I think at this point in my life, I mean, I am just me backwards and forwards. I think I might have had more of a tendency to, what's the word, you know, to cover up more of who I was.
Yeah.
I will tell you that I think that I am, after years and years of doing, I've been doing it for 32 years, and I took a Greyhound bus around the country out of Boston at one point to see what clubs were like in different cities, and I ended up in San Francisco. You know, I literally felt almost instantly that I was kind of among my people.
I see.
And now I hate California.
And yet you live there.
I live here, and I think it is, and as we have shown more than once, we are the stupidest state in the land. I mean, because we started with so much and have just driven it into the ground. The only thing that California really has done in recent years is that because we had Schwarzenegger for governor, he was unable to make any of those movies. And
so that's the accomplishment.
That was our contribution, really, to the life
to
of the rest of the country.
To spare us from more Terminator movies.
That's exactly right.
I see.
And it was not an accident. We did it on purpose. And now, you know, and now we've restored Jerry Brown to where he belongs, and we'll hopefully work our way back up out of the hole.
Paul, I want to play one more clip and just talk about one more theme with you. This is about your introduction to texting. So let's listen to this.
So anyway, so we're watching the Academy Awards, and my daughter, her phone rings. It goes, she has a cell phone, you know, and it goes, and she picks it up and does this into it and then puts it down again. And I thought, well, great, it's over. Whatever it was, it's over. And then it goes,
And she did it again. And I realized, I never knew this. That's texting. I didn't know what texting was. She was texting. This is the stupidest thing I ever saw in my entire life. I mean, if phones hadn't been invented yet, I would say it's brilliant. But, I mean, if you were doing this like in a phone, it would be like, bring, bring, hello, click. Bring, bring, good, and you, click.
That is so great. If phones hadn't been invented, texting would be brilliant. I just love that line.
It's thank you, but isn't it true?
Well, it is. It is sort of absurd when you look at it like that. It's terrific.
It's pointless. It's an enormous waste of time.
So texting was a mystery to you, but you've become very proficient at Twitter. You tweet all the time, and you try jokes out on Twitter, right?
It was a match made in heaven, me and Twitter. I love thinking of things and then putting them out sort of as fast as I can.
So I learned, speaking of that, I learned that you tweeted live through the recent royal wedding between Prince William and Kate Middleton. And can I read just a couple of them? I actually went
through. Oh, I love that.
Okay, so here's one early on in the wedding. Prince William and Prince Harry are in a car on their way to Westminster Abbey. Boy, the traffic's not bad. Royalty has its advantages, I guess. Here's another one. An MSNBC commentator just said she's willing to guarantee there's not a dry eye in this crowd. They've reached the saying anything stage. Anyway, it goes on. They're in the church. Here's one that I like. The Queen. She's not singing along. And then this. How did we get to the Sex Pistols from here? And from here being inside the church during a royal wedding.
With the, you know, the little boys in the doily collars.
I see.
You know, the second something happens, it's really fun to kind of, you know, dash it off like you're a His Girl Friday kind of reporter. You know, and except for it has to be crafted into 140 characters for reasons I'm not really clear about, but I follow the rules. I write the joke, and if the joke doesn't fit, I try to find extraneous words, try to rephrase things in smaller bits, and at the very last resort, I will take out the punctuation that I thought was supposed to be there.
Well, Paula Poundstone, what a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us. We really appreciate it.
I had a great time. Thank you so much.
And Paula Poundstone will perform tonight at the New Bull Run in Shirley. You can get more information about the show on our website, radioboston.org.